latest in college esports from the students that play.
Go behind the scenes at the school's that game.
The only place where esports are
on campus.
Hey guys, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. I am your host, Norris Howard, joined alongside my very close personal hombres. That is Jacob Brothers and Daniel Agbuya. How's it going, fellas?
We are gaming.
We are living. We are Venom. Okay, cool. So we didn't get a chance to really talk about the collegiate clash, the Overwatch collegiate clash, in earnest. We gave it a week off, but we want to sort of talk a little bit about the past couple weeks of collegiate clash, because it's panned out in the way that we sort of figured it would. But at the same time, it's something that is really, really interesting we see coming out of this particular tournament. When we last talked about it, Utah had gone on two straight weekend wins. They were coming up on a bye week, of which eventually UNLV was able to take that top spot 2 weeks ago. Now, UNLV and Utah are both in the same bracket once more. There is no UT Dallas, who only had 1 week to show so far. So we don't know when that team will be back. Well, they'll have to be back for the remaining weeks. But UNLV and Utah continue to be a cut above everybody else and end up seeing each other in the matchup. So we're gonna
I think we got our roles in this storyline right now. I think these two are clearly gonna be like the ones to look out for. This is like the eternal rivals here.
Yeah, no, as far as playoff teams, it's gonna be Utah, Las Vegas, Mississippi, and Dallas.
Yeah. Flat out. I mean, everybody else is a little bit too far behind now. I'm really disappointed in some of the other schools, especially like UC Boulder, who kinda have always been kind of around but never could get over the hump against any one of those other four teams. But it really seems like Utah and UNLV, even more so than Mississippi State, is kind of just, they're playing out of their minds. And we're seeing this on the back of some really, really incredible DPS play. Everybody said that these, you know, hero pools and role queue and stuff like that will force more DPS to sort of stand out and take a role. I think that hasn't been more evident than as we've seen in this tournament, to be honest with you.
For people who don't really are kind of new to the whole Overwatch thing, how important, what is DPS and how important is it exactly? Why is it everyone talking about that?
Well, for UNLV, it's why they're even in the tournament. So they have one player and they need to hold on to him for as long as he lives, because
what is their role exactly? What do they actually?
Well, they do damage. You know, they're there to make damage, but part of what, you know, why they fell off is because for about a year, DPS just kind of couldn't out damage being able to run triple tank and triple support, being able to run goats.
It was the most fun version of Overwatch, some would say.
I'm not even gonna lie to you. It's a hot take to a lot of people. I kind of miss goats. I'm gonna be honest.
I strongly disagree.
I kind of miss it. And the reason why I say that is because it did take a lot of coordination, and no normal people should not be trying it. But at the same time, DPS fell out of favor. The role queues came in and forced everyone playing in a tournament to have to play these damage heroes, and I think UNLV and Utah have definitely shown that this is just kind of what Overwatch will look like on all levels. I mean, it is so DPS heavy, but it's still so fun to watch.
It's much more fun to watch.
Yeah, and so we wanted to throw it to Jacob. Jacob, the finals this week were actually UNLV and Utah, the teams we were just talking about. Run us through a little bit of the high points of the match, because, again, this is a rematch from week two of the collegiate clash, where Utah was able to take the top spot. What happened over the past week this time?
Well, over the past week, Utah finally lost a map. It was crazy.
So you're saying that Utah can bleed?
They can kind of bleed. They can bleed out of, like, you know, a toe or something. They lost a map and drew a map.
Oh.
So, yeah, very, very crazy. And so since Utah finally did lose a map, I wanted to focus on that map, because obviously Utah did win 3-1 in the end of the day. But when UNLV won Blizzard World, what did they do, right? That's what matters. How do you beat Utah? And UNLV beat Utah because they have Kevin Durant. So what happened in this map is Kevin Durant was being properly supported. He always had a shield on him. He was always healed. And Cool ABC and Koblart just didn't shut him down every time. If you're playing against someone that has a player that you can look at him and say, he is the player, you need to shut him down every engagement, or else you're going to have a bad time. So since he wasn't being shut down every engagement, he would just tear through. And then Wild Wingbat was playing Mei. So whenever someone rolled up on the cart, they would get frozen. And then Dr. Chowder had good Graviton usage. And Dunmere did not always die first. So when you combine those things... Yeah. So when you combine those things, you win. Because also, in this Blizzard world, Utah's aggression got the best of them in the very end, which was kind of interesting because... I mean, Utah made a play that was not a bad idea. UNLV just had to get the point, and they didn't have much time. So Utah was like, let's just take the fight to them. And they tried to out-aggress the aggressor, which did not pan out. I would not try to out-aggress Dunmere in any situation. And Dunmere was actually the king of that fight, where he was like, I'm just going to swing, and you're going to play my game. And I love this video game. And then they got to the point.
Yeah, and so on the back of that, talking about Kevin Durant, this was evident even more so beyond just the map that UNLV was able to capture. It kind of did extend into the next map of Volskaya, where that did end up a draw. But in the last few fights, in the last round, you had the healer from Utah moving up completely in the front lines, which doesn't make sense. But you can't do that against a player like Kevin Durant. He was on Ashe on a strong hit, not necessarily a strong hit scan, but a hit scan nonetheless, and was able to just pick him out instantly, and that fight was lost. And that's a big reason as to why that map was a draw, that one decision. So, you know, to go back to what Daniel was saying about can Utah bleed, I think yes, but they're only going to stab themselves. And you have
Utah had an off week this week, for sure. You could tell their communication was off in the majority of the maps. Their ultimates were being used at different times. Their rotates were a little whack. Like, you could tell that their communication was not fully there. And so it's too bad that UNLV couldn't crack more on that.
So Jacob, are you saying this that the UNLV's loss isn't more so much UNLV like being them, it's just like Utah just like not being in the right mindset? Is it? Are we kind of like taking credit away from UNLV here?
I think if you look at Junkertown is a good example of that, where they full held UNLV because Koblart and Cool ABC decided to play two snipers essentially, and they bodied the entire team very easily. But it is also a perfect storm because, again, Kevin Durant was the best player on some of those maps. The Utah DPS couldn't always shut him down. Dunmere was not flying off the map. So you combine all those things on top of Utah's lack of communication, and then that's how they won that one map. The fact that they couldn't is kind of on UNLV, because I feel like Kevin Durant's a star of the show, and I like Wild Wing Bat, but the other players aren't like peak of their class like Utah is. On Utah, every player is doing exactly what they should. Both of their tanks are great tanks. Both of their healers are great healers. They take good engagements. They take good disengagements. You know, they play their roles correctly, while UNLV appears to be just leaning primarily on their top tier DPS.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that assessment. However, the one thing I will say is that Dunmere is somebody that has a lot of upside if he is supported properly. And I think that's what comes down to talking about those support players, because there were plenty of times 2 weeks ago where you saw Dunmere, you know, maybe made a call to go forward or maybe made a call to go aggressive, and his supports were not able to either go in behind him, or his DPS were not able to lay down any sort of suppressing fire. So it's really interesting to see, you know, this week, because it felt like while Utah's communication perhaps was not there, it did feel like UNLV's communication was significantly more effective. But at the end of the day, Utah's superior talent, their more well-rounded roster balance, ended up winning out the day, and they go into this as the unmitigated favorites. I think UT Dallas kind of gave people a little bit of a moment of pause UNLV has been in the mix the entire time. But it with this win, knowing that Utah could play as sloppy as they did on certain maps and still come out with a 3-1 win, I think is very telling for the rest of the field.
Well, let me ask both of you guys, like, what can a team do to get over that, like, that final hurdle, that final boss, if you will? What can they do against Utah to take more than one map from them?
The issue for UNLV is that they play a coin flip kind of match. They go into an engagement and they say, we're either winning this or we're losing this. And aggression does work sometimes. But you have to realize, like, say when Dunmere flies in, he's either going to win that or lose that, and they just put their entire team fight into a coin flip. When Kevin Durant jumps in, granted, he's very good at what he does, but still, every engagement he makes is a coin flip. UNLV needs to do, in all teams, they need to do a better job of just locking in what they want to do. Because one thing that Utah did in this specific final is that they forced the DPS to constantly swap. There was a lot of fights where they didn't have their ultimates because UNLV was like, this isn't working, we gotta swap right now. So there has to be times when, like, something doesn't work, but trust the process of that fight, or swap early enough. Because even in the final map, they saw that they saw that Kevin Durant was running Hanzo, and they said, oh, he's running Hanzo, let's just run into them and tell him. Yeah. And then he had to swap and he couldn't get his ultimate because he swapped.
Yeah. And another thing that I'll say is you definitely don't want to lean too heavy on DPSs, especially when the team has really, really great support. If you have a team that has really good tanks, tanks are usually still slower. They could get caught out. You could catch them in the middle of a cooldown. There's a lot of ways that with proper focus fire, a tank can go down. But when your supports are really good, it makes a DPS's job a lot harder. And that's sort of why when you've seen success with a lot of teams, both in the Overwatch League and in the lower tiers of play, even though they'll have star DPS players, almost inevitably the best player on that team is a support. Almost always a support, or every now and then you get a tank. I think of Super from San Francisco. I think of Bumper from, you know, I think of Jet, you know, I think of these sort of players that a team is built around. You very rarely see a team built around a DPS that is successful. So I think when UNLV goes up against Utah again, if that is indeed our final, I think there needs to be more focus on Utah supports and less focus on Koblar and Cool ABC. And I think they need to get off, you know, leaning too heavily on Kevin Durant. I think,
and they really like to dive.
Yeah, I think Wild Wingback is a very serviceable DPS, but I think those frontline guys and those supports have to stop going every engagement. All right, Kevin Durant, go do something awesome and win the team fight for us, which is what a lot of it feels like. But unfortunately, that's going to be all that we have time for on this subject. Yeah, I know. It's interesting because, again, because this thing has been made so easy for us to understand and digest, it becomes a lot easier to analyze and talk about the trends that we're seeing.
Norris, can I ask you this one quick question? Can you give me like a quick answer for this one?
Of course.
We're halfway through the season. We have four more tournaments left. Is that enough time to make the adjustments against Utah?
For UNLV in Dallas, yes.
Yes, okay. But that's it. Maybe
Mississippi, but that's a long shot.
I was about to say, actually, I even think time is running very thin for Dallas. They haven't had a lot of play time. They're going to have to play four straight weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see what changes they have made. But that's going to be it. We're going to be right back with more Checkpoint XP on campus. Well, we're going to be talking about Fortnite. And I know you're looking as weird like Fortnite, but there's rumors swirling around and some ideas about how Fortnite can clamp down on this community and hopefully make it grow a little bit more. So we're gonna have that coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus.
What's up, y'all?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's Kevin here for Checkpoint XP on campus. And in honor of Easter this month, me and a couple other members of the team are here to share some of our favorite video game Easter eggs with you guys. As the resident Star Wars nerd on the show, I was delighted with how high quality Respawn Entertainment's 2019 game, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, turned out to be. It was a densely packed game with wonderful treasure trove of Easter eggs. My favorite of which has some big Star Wars universe implications. When you visit Ilum, the snow planet where Cal must craft his lightsaber, upon arriving, you realize that the planet known for housing kyber crystals for ancient Jedi ceremonies would eventually become the deadly Starkiller-based weapon from Star Wars The Force Awakens.
The COVID-19 pandemic has affected us all. But for some, it's led to near unlivable conditions. Many families rely on the meals provided by schools to feed their children. But with schools across the country closing their doors, those families are left desperate for solutions. And that's why we're so proud to partner with No Kid Hungry and a handful of others for Shutdown Showdown. 100% of our proceeds will support the charity to ensure kids get the meals they need during school closures and all year long. But we wouldn't be able to do it alone. So far, gamers and brands have come together by competing and donating to support our response effort to combat COVID-19's effect on the world. And we want you to join the fight alongside us. So grab your teammates and drop into Shutdown Showdown for those in need of your support and join the fight so together we can win the fight.
Hey guys, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And I have a couple guests here with me today. I'm really excited because, you know, they represent a school that's very near and dear to my heart. Wayne State University is where I went to college. But they've also announced that they're putting together sort of a gamer / esports space in the Student Center of Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. So we want to welcome them. Andrea Gerber and Curtis Kratt of Wayne State University. Andrea is the Director of Student Center Services, and Curtis Kratt is our background desktop engineering guy for the university. So thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us. We're excited about this.
Yeah, so Andrea, I want to start with you. Wayne State University is smack dab in the middle of the city of Detroit. It's a city that's kind of underserved by a lot of tech, and especially when it comes to the world of esports. What led into the university's decision to create this space?
Well, we're always looking for a place to make sure that students feel welcome at their university. And so what that means for one student is very different than what it means for another student. So that could be fraternities and sororities, it could be volunteering, it could be esports. So we have seen a lot of student organizations pop up in the last few years that are putting kind of esports in our radar. And we have groups that are meeting on campus, and we're pulling, you know, extension cords and stuff like that to set them up, these makeshift facilities. And then the idea has been on campus for a couple of years now. I know Curtis was working on a potential opportunity in a different building for a while. And then it dropped into our laps in the Student Center probably, 8 months ago now. And we've been working on making it happen for students. And I think it's really important that we give an opportunity for all students, no matter what their interests are, a location to engage and feel connected to their university. So that's what really put it at the forefront of what we wanted to do for the students.
And so I remember back in the day, the Student Center being a place where us gamers got together in the basement, and there was like a In the Groove machine and a Capcom vs. SNK2 and Guilty Gear machine. This is years ago. I'm very old. But, I want to talk to you, Curtis. What sort of space are we talking about? What's the footprint of this thing? And what kind of machines are we talking about?
Yeah. So if you've been in the basement, in the past couple of years, at least, we've got a lounge area that's already dedicated to console gaming for the most part.
Yes.
There's three wall-mounted TVs. It's kind of a bring-your-own console experience. Got a lot of Smash Brothers happening, but we get big crowds, and it's obviously in interest to the students on campus. So what we're doing is we are closing off that space. We've got a nice glass storefront coming, high walls, nice airflow. And what we're doing is we're setting up, in addition to those three console stations, 20 Alienware Aurora R9 workstations, gaming stations. We're going with the Lunar Light model, if anyone's interested in checking out the colors. But we've done what we can to deck them out in order to really ensure they are going to last us for years into the future.
Yeah, and so you briefly alluded to Smash Brothers. Now, everybody out there knows that Southeast Michigan in particular is one of the central hubs for professional Smash Brothers. Two big tournaments go down in Detroit during the Smash Brothers season. And so is that where you guys have been seeing the majority of the energy from? Or are you seeing many communities from different games pop up, which led to you guys wanting to do also PC additions to the space?
Go ahead, Curtis.
As I say, we have, like I'd mentioned, Smash is very popular in the basement of the student center, in the lower level, rather. However, we do have a very active Wayne Esports student organization. They've got some other large teams. I believe it's Overwatch and League of Legends, in addition to their Smash groups. One of the big things was the president and provost kind of seeing that this is a good opportunity to re-engage students. It's an opportunity for recruiting new students who might be looking for a bigger esports presence in the university they select. And ultimately, you know, a lot of our peers are doing it. So we want to make sure that we are collaborating with our peers, we're gaming with them, and really getting these initiatives going on campus.
We're talking to Andrea Gerber and Curtis Kratt of Wayne State University. They've just announced that they'll be dedicating a 20-plus machine gaming and esports space. There'll also be an area for console gaming as well. And Andrea, I want to turn this question to you. With a 20-machine space, in the ability to have really these high power machines, one of the only places that a lot of students will be able to use machines of this caliber, especially here in the city. What sort of events is the student center planning? Because I know that this will be a thing that's open to the student body, but are you guys looking with this towards maybe hosting events as well?
Absolutely. So we are in that kind of policy making stage right now. So we have done all of the architectural drawings, ordering of the furniture, the gaming stations themselves, all of that stuff. And so now we're in that phase. So what we're looking for is, how do we make sure that students are getting the priority? So we make sure in all of our spaces in the student center that we do that. And then looking at how to support our student organizations to host events. We get a lot of requests, and our facility just doesn't have everything that it needs. So now that we do have a facility that can host events, we will absolutely open it up to that. As well as, we've even been looking at everything from tournaments on the weekends to, I don't know, Curtis sent me over some of the facilities are hosting kids' birthday parties. I mean, there's lots of different activities that we're thinking about and looking at as we develop our policies, but sticking to our students first, and then also using it as a place for the city to host really awesome events and to draw people to Midtown.
To
piggyback off that, the community has a relatively strong console presence as it is, console gaming presence, where I think there isn't opportunity is in PC gaming. So we are looking to also engage with organizations such as the Michigan High School Esports Federation, allowing them to use this facility as part of their circuit, to get on their schedule and have a place where we can have multiple high schools come and knock out a tournament on a Saturday, for instance.
Awesome. And so the last question I definitely have to ask is that, is Wayne State University thinking about varsity esports in the near future? Oakland University announced last year that they are taking their esports organization varsity, the first Division I school to do so. Is this something that Wayne State is interested in? I would love for this to happen because I need another reason to buy Warriors merch. So tell me good news.
I don't have good news yet. So okay. This is kind of our we're baby stepping into this, right? We've got a 20 machine facility coming up. We're going to see and verify that we have, you know, verbally and over surveys, we have the interest from the students. But I can only imagine more positive things come out of it if it really takes off on campus.
Andrea Gerber and Curtis Kratt, both from Wayne State University, talking about their brand new gaming and esports facility they are bringing to the student center there on campus. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us today. And I can't wait to see this thing. If you have ribbon cutting or something, let me be there because I'm over the moon about this.
All right, you could be our announcer for our grand opening. How about
that? Hey, see, there it is. We got it right there on camera, on tape. That's awesome. So thank you so much, guys, for joining us. And we'll have more coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hey, this is Norris from Checkpoint XP, here to bring you your next CSL flashback. This time, we go to CSGO, where we see University of Massachusetts Pat go absolutely nuts with the scope.
This is such a clever play. They rotate back up, but they've got the barrel of Pat in the way. He gets one, he even gets a second. Oh my god, Pat!
Stop it.
What are you... Oh my god, Pat, stop. What the hell is this?
Stop!
Pat! I freaked out just a little bit there.
Hey, what's up? I'm Robbie from Checkpoint XP.
And I'm Jake from the Overwatch League casting team. And together, we're your hosts of the Owl's Nest.
With the Overwatch League up and running again, we'll be bringing you all the latest from the league and within Overwatch.
But it's important that we all do our part to flatten the curve by staying home during the COVID-19 outbreak.
So stay home.
Stay healthy.
And we'll see you every Friday night on the Owl's Nest before the Overwatch League weekend.
Check it out at the Checkpoint XP YouTube channel or at checkpointxp.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus. Your host, Norris Howard, here with another episode of this really great show about college esports alongside Jacob Brothers and Daniel Agbuya. I don't want you guys to forget, we're still always putting stuff up on the website, a litany of stories about the latest news in all of esports, as well as what's going on in the world of gaming in general. I know a lot of you are out there are playing Final Fantasy Remake right now. A lot of you may be still playing Resident Evil. Valorant. We got stories on all that stuff, so make sure you guys head over to the website checkpointxp.com, as well as search for all of our content on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, type in Checkpoint XP, and we'll be the first ones popping up. So we want to see you over there as well. Now, we want to shift gears a little bit and talk a bit about Fortnite. Now, I know you're looking like Valorant's coming out and CSGO is going on. And why are we talking about Fortnite? Well, Fortnite, up until the Valorant, you know, closed beta, was still arguably the most popular video game in the world. And part of that is on the backs of a very young community, a very young dynamic demographic, a very young player base. And so as Fortnite has continued to mature, we've started to see trends, unfortunately, with bad actors, and many of them underaged. We have FaZe Jarvis, who was banned from the game and streaming the game last year. Underaged, I believe he was 17 at the time. And now we're also seeing official tournaments in which teams are being banned for cheating. The FNCS Duo's top two teams banned from that tournament. So I think the first question here is the age of the Fortnite demographic, the Fortnite player, is that becoming an issue for Fortnite being viewed viably as an esport, guys?
Jacob, why don't you start us off?
Okay, I think the answer is no, but it's also a tricky situation because it's a game by game situation, right? Like, say Pokemon. We just saw like an 8-year-old girl last year win in the juniors rank, and that was awesome. And you can't cheat because Nintendo doesn't even let normal people, you know, you know, do what they want to a game. So in Fortnite, it maybe could be. But also, high school is a very important... We've talked about how high schools is a very important ground. Just that's the next frontier, you know? Get high schools ready so that way that colleges can pick them up, and that way pro teams can pick them up later. But also, Fortnite is not going to be around for that long of a haul, I believe. I think both Fortnite and Apex are fun games, and they're good for tournaments, like fighting games. But I don't think it's sustainable through, like, multiple tiers, you know? Like... You know, I don't think if they got rid of high school, it probably would not be that big of a deal for Fortnite tournaments.
Okay, so essentially what you're saying is that, you know, Fortnite is in that sort of league of esports. And don't get me wrong, I know Fortnite is big, but they mm-hmm. have not established any sort of, you know, legitimate esports structure in the same way that, you know, not League of Legends, but Call of Duty has, if we're going to keep the sort of shooter analogy to the same point. Mm-hmm. But you said something very interesting. You're saying by getting rid of high school. So you're saying that if you get rid of high school and you make it a 18 plus type situation where only adults can play the game, that will somehow be better for the pro community? Because I'm not necessarily sure if I see it that way.
Well, I wouldn't want to see it that way, but it does kind of speak that almost all of the cheaters have been underaged. That is kind of an important bullet point.
I'm just not sure I buy the idea, like, the own, like, removing, like, increasing the age of pro tournaments is going to be at 18 is going to stop cheating, because I am of the belief, like, there's cheaters of all ages.
Oh, absolutely. Whether,
I just feel like the ones that get caught are the ones who are underage, and that's the one, and because they're underage, it becomes a much more of a bigger deal than it really is. So the idea that this increasing the age is going to curb this cheating is kind of a flawed idea, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just to highlight that, you know, Valorant is out, Warzone is out. Fortnite is a game that's going to have to do something very quickly about them losing viewership on Twitch, about them losing player base, because a lot of these other games are also free to play. They have much, you know, really big brand recognition. Valorant is a totally new IP that people are very excited about. But Fortnite is still a very, very, very popular game. And I'm not sure that getting rid of a large portion of that player base by virtue of age does anything to help Fortnite. If anything, I would think they would want to lean more into it regardless of the cheaters, because as Daniel said, and I agree, there's going to be cheaters no matter what. But if you have a community that is mostly youth players, you still want to foster that, because they're going to take the game with them as they age. That's how a game doesn't die. You can't expect people to pick a game up at 20 and take it throughout the rest of their lives. It just doesn't happen that often. But to take a kid who's 13 and build that into them, you make fun of us for loving fighting games so much, but it's because we played them when we were young, and we can't get rid of them. That knowledge and that love is in you no matter what. So I think if I'm Epic, and I know they've already raised the age to play and stream the game to 13, if I'm Epic, I'm not necessarily sure if I do anything in that.
Well, I think that's the restructure. I think they did restructure the whole idea of, like, how could, is this an esport? They gotta make a decision there. Like, if they want to make it an esport, then they gotta make it run like an esport. They gotta set the standard. They gotta set the rules. They gotta set like a protocol for this cheating. But if they don't want to make an esport, then continue what they're doing. You know,
similar to the Pokemon analogy I made. The reason why there's no cheaters or any problems in their Pokemon tournaments is because that thing is locked down, right? Nintendo is so rigorous with their games. If Fortnite, because obviously everyone should be able to play that game at whatever age. If they're playing it now, they should be playing it now. But they need to put in those level of precautions. When you download Valorant, you have to restart your entire computer so that the cheating software can work.
And people are really upset about that, because they feel like that's invasive. I mean, this is very to do for a free-to-play game. I mean, Nintendo can do it because those are full-price retail games. They're closed-loop systems. You usually actually have the whole game on a cart or on a disc or something like that. But what you get is it. That's it. Front, back, open, close. There's not a lot of online connectivity to a lot of Pokemon games besides simple trading. So there's a lot less ways for people to sort of get in and you know, cheat with these games. So I don't want to unfairly put that on Epic. I understand that it's difficult to do. But I don't think by saying, oh, no kids, I don't think that helps. I think if anything, that would actively destroy the last sort of loyal part of that community, because these streamers, they're going to hop to Valorant. They're going to hop to some other game. They're already doing it. They're going to hop to the game that's getting them the most views, point blank, period. So I think this is a very interesting conversation. And I think a lot of games are going to have to start thinking about this if they want to have these pro scenes and these, you know, pipeline style esports events and esports tournaments, because, you know, we hear stories every day about kids getting cheated out of money, or parents, you know, signing documents and signing contracts that they perhaps shouldn't. So we don't want any more of that. So I get it from that point, but at the same time, you got to keep your community. And so a cool conversation, a very interesting conversation, not one we usually have here on campus in this style, but we felt like it was interesting to talk about, and we wanted to share that with you. But unfortunately, that's going to be it for this week's Checkpoint XP on Campus. I'm sorry, Dan. I'm sorry, man. Aww. Okay, do we got a limited time? You know, we got stuff to sell.
You can talk about Terry later.
Yeah, we can talk about Capcom vs. SNK later off camera. But anyway, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank everybody that helps out with the show. Obviously, Jacob Brothers and Daniel Agbuya. We want to thank Weird Beer, who helps us out with all our video behind the scenes, and as well as all of the UNLV support staff that helps these guys out with both research and just general morals. support as we all try to get through our self-isolation. So from the Checkpoint XP on Campus crew to you, we hope and demand that you return for next week's Checkpoint XP on Campus. See you later.
We like Fortnite. We like Fortnite.
Take care of yourselves, guys.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.